Today, we are very blessed to have 130 or so children and youth involved in our religious education and youth programs. And today, we acknowledge the role that the greater community, particularly a church community like this one, has in raising our children to become fine adults. So to begin our worship this morning, Michelle and I would like to read what we believe is important for our children to learn, to know, and to experience. And we invite you to respond by saying, "It takes a village to raise a child."
It is important for our children to know that they are cared for, to know that they are part of a larger family, an important part of a bigger human picture.
It takes a village to raise a child. It is important for our children to believe in themselves, to trust in themselves, to know that they can make a difference.
It takes a village to raise a child. It is important for our children to know our Unitarian Universalist principles, to find ways to live them in their daily lives, and to realize that the choices they make are important.
It takes a village to raise a child. It is important for our children to be able to speak about our faith, to honor its history and its heritage, and to appreciate its heroes and heroines.
It takes a village to raise a child. It is important for our children to explore religious truth and meaning in the Jewish, Christian, and other world religions, and to know that ours is a religion worth having.
It takes a village to raise a child. It is important for our children to experience the spirit of life, to feel a presence of awe at the grandeur of the world, to live lives of empathy and compassion.
It takes a village to raise a child. It is important for our children to have fun together and with us, to have wonderful memories of this place, and to know the value of a religious community.
It takes a village to raise a child. It is important for our children to understand that life has its challenges as well as its rewards, and to have the tools so that they can handle both.
It takes a village. It is important for our children to know that it's good and worthwhile to have their own journey, and to know deep in their hearts that wherever that journey takes them, they will always have a loving home here at FPC.
It takes a village to raise a child. Please be seated and ready for a grand production.
All right, I want to welcome you to our production of This is the House That Ari Built.
Hey, kindly, elderly, you lady, tell us another story.
All right, children. All right, quiet down. And I will tell you another story. Once upon a time, in this very church, there was a group of parents. And these parents came together to talk about the things they wanted for their children when they came to church.
I would like my children to learn and understand Unitarian Universalism and other world religions.
Oh, yes, I would like my children to learn about the impact of their choices as they grow.
I completely agree, but I would also add that it's important for children to understand that with knowledge comes the opportunity to work for social justice in the world, to make a positive difference.
I would like my children to have a place where they can be themselves and express themselves in their words and their creativity.
Agreed. And also, it seems important when talking about these things that we look at our own church principles for learning and growth.
But who can teach all this?
So the parents put on their thinking caps and they pondered. And they pondered. And they pondered. And then it came to them.
Aha!
So the teachers set off to build the house of RE. They added the building blocks that they thought were so important for their children. The children were happy, and the parents were happy.
Yippee!
But as time went on, winds of challenge began to blow through the world. There were the winds of intolerance and discrimination, the winds of peer pressure and bullying, the winds of social media and consumerism, the winds of self-absorption and selfishness, and the winds of hatred. These winds swirled around the church, and the parents and children cried out in fear. And the parents watched the house that RE built begin to sway under the forces of pressure. The parents verily quaked in their boots.
I hate to say this, but I'm not sure our RE program has everything it needs to help our children in the face of these winds.
I fear you are correct, but the three of us cannot do it all by ourselves. We need help. Help!
Then, from the back of the church, a voice rang out.
Oh, how wonderful. But we'll need more teachers for weekly classes. Are there people here who might be able to help us teach our classes?
Hi, I'm Frank Nelson. I've never been to work with kids before.
That is not a problem. Our RE director can provide you with support, and you can work with a seasoned teacher to help you learn. Special things to share just as you are. Can anyone else help?
I can help.
I know you'd really like to try, but are new to this church and don't think you even know that much about Unitarian Universalism.
Our DRE, Michelle, along with the Religious Education Committee, will provide all the materials to you. And you can learn with your students. What can be better than learning together?
Anybody else?
I would like to help, but I really would, but I don't think I have time to come every week.
Well, our religious education program has so many parts and keeps growing every year. We can find places for many people who have different time availability or skills. Let's get creative. Everyone who has something to add, please come on down.
Coming of age, service projects, red team, world religions, our whole lives, commonly known as OWL, orange team, and junior youth, blue team, child dedications. Youth choir. UU principals, social justice, first chalice program, general assembly, yellow team, child care, children and youth worship, high school discussion group. Okay, Mummers Play, Senior Youth, RE Committee, Children's Choir, and what else? Question mark.
And everyone sang and danced and made merry and lived happily ever after.
Well, wait a minute. They almost could do that. But I want you to take a second. I want to ask these guys to look at all of the parts of our RE program. Isn't that amazing? And we have such a vibrant and wonderful religious education program here at FPC. The House of RE, which so many of you have been helping us build. This year, in particular, has been a magical year for RE in so many ways. But in order for us to keep this magic alive, we must call on you again to volunteer, to become involved in whatever ways can work for you, and to add even more magic to our House of RE. Today we'll be registering teachers and volunteers. Please look into your programs. No, I made this mistake again. Do not look in your programs. There's no registration forms there, but they are downstairs in the lower, in the vestry. And then look for those forms, and then also look into your hearts and join us for another year and another wonderful journey into a true community as we support our children and youth as they continue to grow as Unitarian Universalists. Thank you. A round of applause for all of our...
gone through this.
Thanks, Steve. All of this is only possible. All of this is only possible with the help of extraordinary volunteers who commit untold hours of time and service to this project. And we want to recognize those volunteers this morning. So, Michelle, would you please lead us in that recognition?
Yes. So we have people here that give of their time to our religious education program. Not all really willingly. There's some people that love to teach, and other people are like, I don't know, it makes me a little nervous. But if we didn't have those nervous people step forward, as well as the ones that love to teach, we wouldn't have an RE program. Because this is a cooperative program. That means this whole parish, this whole church comes together to help our kids and our youth to be part of a religious education program. And this past year was the first year in 6 years that I actually did not need to beg someone to teach. Right from June, we had an early registration, and by June we had all of our slots filled up. A couple people moved, couldn't help that, so we had to find new people, but it was really easy to do that. And it's really thanks to just the people that are not just parents, but also others that chose to give of their time to the program. That made a world of difference. So even if you don't have kids, please consider giving those 7 or 8 weeks. It is a lot of fun. And at this point, I'm going to just give a little token of appreciation to those people that volunteered in our religious education program. And I'm going to ask Wiley Cordone to come forward. She's one of our chairs to help give things out. And Tom maybe can help out on the other side. So today we're giving out light bulbs. And there's a reason for this. One, because I do believe that every person who teaches and volunteers in our RE program brings a light to our kids. Another reason is because there's a famous UU named Louis Latimer, and he actually helped improve the light bulb after Thomas Edison invented it and made it cost-effective so that everyone could start having electricity. So because of a famous UU, kind of like our Steve Evans, we have... We have electricity that became available for all. The other idea that I like is this is also a symbol of an idea. And when, you know, you often see this as an icon, and you all bring such wonderful ideas to your RE programs, even to the nursery. I see people like sitting down and reading books and just coming in with their own ideas. And the other part is it's a hard surface, but inside here are the sweet things. And that is what really makes a difference, is that you teach and then you get something back. You always get something back when you volunteer. Might take a while, but you always do. And then, just as a little lesson for me this morning, as I was filling these at 6 o'clock this morning, I realized there was like 6 or 8 of these bulbs that weren't like all the other ones. They wouldn't fit M&Ms in. So I had to find another way to reach these light bulbs, and I put chocolate chips in them. And then there was this one. This one light bulb, not only would it not take M&Ms, but then it wouldn't fasten. So it has tape on it. And there's always that one situation when you teach that it just doesn't feel like it fits sometimes, but then you still get that sweet reward. So I just want to thank you all and to encourage anyone to really think about giving back. And there's ways to give back that don't involve actually teaching every week as well. So if you can check out the table downstairs, that would be awesome. And at this point, I'm going to name all the people that taught. And then unfortunately, when this got cut and pasted, some of the names got left off. So if your name is not here and it should be, please come forward and accept my humble apologies that your name is not here. And I'm just going to name all the names from 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. And please come forward and get a light bulb. We're going to save the little ones, though, for the next part. Janet Beatrice, Christy Boulay, Cece Braun, Aaron Brennan. So Janet, come on forward. Get your light bulb. Aaron, come on forward. Leona Burgess, Brendan Chetwin, Kirsten Chetwin, Peter Fisk, Jody Freeman, Brock Gallia, Chris Gistay, Lisa Gordon, and if Lisa's not here, someone can come for her, Marie Giles, John Haberly, Ingrid Holcomb, Joe Holmes, Judy Holmes, Holly Horton, Laura Howry, Kate Imhoff, Karen Kinnear, Scott Lilliott, Keith Lundberg, Rebecca McNeil, Nancy Maldari, Corinne Marble, Olivia Marble, and those are two youth that actually gave several weeks of their own time to teach our red team, and that was a really awesome thing, and I'd love to encourage any youth to do that again next year. Lisa Martino, Roy Miller, Deb O'Connell, Michael Palladini, Peggy Palladini, Joe Parse, Susan Powers, Neil Saunders, Suzanne Schultz, Rebecca Stadolnik, Sue Stewart, Jolene Sullivan, who not only did the membership coordination, but also ran our first Chalice program on a volunteer basis, Norm Thibault, Michelle Wade, Jen Wiley-Cordone, Peter Wiley-Cordone, Matt Wisely, and last but not least, Lynn Wish. And then in addition to these people that gave several weeks, we had four youth that gave four or more weeks of their time, and that was Anna Cataldo Holmes, Shawen Holmes, Bree Parse, and if Bree isn't here, you can get one for her, and Alana Sinclair. And if we can just get a round of applause for these awesome volunteers.
I'd like to share a reading with you by Robert Fulghum from his book, All I Really Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. Giants, wizards, and ogres was the game to play. Being left in charge of about 80 children, 7 to 10 years old, while their parents were off doing parenty things, I mustered my troops in the church social hall and explained the game. It was a large-scale version of rock, paper, scissors, and it involved some intellectual decision-making. But the real purpose of the game is to make a lot of noise, run around, chase people until nobody knows which side they're on or who won. Organizing a room of wired-up grade schoolers into two teams, explaining the rudiments of the game, achieving consensus or group identity, this is no mean accomplishment. But we did it right good, and we were ready to go. The excitement of the chase reached its critical mass when I yelled out, "You have to decide, are you a giant, a wizard, or an ogre?" While groups huddled and frenzied and whispered in consultation, a tug came at my pant leg. A small child stands there looking up and asks in a small, concerned voice, "Where do the mermaids stand? Where do the mermaids stand?" A long pause, a very long pause. "Where do the mermaids stand?" says I. "Yes, you see, I'm a mermaid." "There's no such thing as mermaids." "Oh, yes, I am one." She did not relate to being a giant, a wizard, or an ogre. She knew her category, mermaid, and was not about to leave the game and go over and stand against the wall where a loser would stand. She intended to participate wherever mermaids fit into the scheme of things, without giving up dignity or identity. She took it for granted there was a place for mermaids and that I would know just where. Well, where do the mermaids stand? All the mermaids, all those who are different, who do not fit the norm, who do not accept the available boxes or pigeonholes. Answer the question, and you can build a school, a nation, or a world on it. What was my answer at the moment? Every once in a while, I say the right thing. "The mermaids stand right here by the king of the sea," says I. "Just right here by the King of Fools, I thought to myself. So we stood there hand in hand, reviewing the troops of wizards, giants, and ogres as they rolled by in wild disarray. It's not true, by the way, that mermaids do not exist. I know at least one personally. I've held her hand.
We've cleared off the table, the leftovers saved, washed the dishes and put them away. I have told you a story and tucked you in tight at the end of your knockabout day. As the moon sets its sails to carry you to sleep over the midnight sea, I will sing you a song no one sang to me. May it keep you good company. You can be anybody you want to be. You can love whomever you will. You can travel any country where your heart leads. Know that I will love you still. You can live by yourself. You can gather friends around. You can choose one special one. And the only measure of your words and your deeds will be the love you leave behind when you're done. There are girls who grow up strong and bold. There are boys quiet and kind. Some race on ahead, some follow behind, some go in their own way and time. Some women love women, some men love men, some raise children, some never do. You can dream all the day, never reaching the end of everything possible for you. Don't be rattled by names, by taunts, by games, but seek out spirits true. If you give your friends the best part of yourself, they will give the same back to you. You can be anybody you want to be. You can love whomever you will. You can travel any country where your heart leads. Know that I will love you still. You can live by yourself. You can gather friends around. You can choose one special one. And the only measure of your words and your deeds will be the love you leave behind when you're done. And the only measure of your words and your deeds will be the love you leave behind when you're done.
This morning I want to explore religious education with you, and to begin, I want to invite you to reflect on your own experience as a child. Were you involved in some kind of religious education program as a child? I know some were not, either by parental intentionality or simple neglect. A formal program of religious education was not part of your childhood. But most of us here probably were brought up attending some kind of religious education program. For some of us, it was a good experience. For For others, a difficult and maybe even harmful one. And for most of us, it was probably a mix of both good and bad. Some here attended Unitarian Universalist Sunday School, but most of us were raised in other traditions. Some of you went to temple school and learned the traditions, teachings, and even the language of your heritage. You learned what it meant to be proudly Jewish in a diverse society. Many others here attended Protestant Sunday schools. These come in a variety of flavors, from those that focus on Bible stories that teach about a loving Jesus who is our friend, to those who actually scare children with teachings of sin and hell and damnation. Many here went to Catholic catechism as a child. And if you are of my age or older, it was during the era of what's known as the Baltimore Catechism, a series of questions and answers which you had to memorize. And even if you were younger and perhaps were involved in a less rote kind of Catholic religious education, the Catholic Church has no qualms about the purpose of their religious education. That is to firmly plant the doctrine of the Church within you. Those of us who did attend some kind of religious education certainly learned some worthwhile teachings, but in most all these teachings, we were told what category we fit into, where to stand. There was not room to be a mermaid. The story of the mermaid that I read this morning resonates with me because of my own experience with religious education as a child. My dad is Roman Catholic, and my mother was part of a federated Unitarian Congregational Church. I attended catechism on a weekday afternoon at the local Catholic church, but I also attended the federated church on many Sunday mornings, particularly with my maternal grandmother. She was the daughter of a minister, and I am sure it was her mission to dilute the Catholicism that I was receiving in catechism in the hopes that I would eventually choose a liberal faith tradition. Well, she got her wish. You see, when I was young, often due to my parents' schedule working on the weekends, I regularly spent the weekend with my grandparents, and I would always go to church with my grandmother. Now, to complicate it even more, my grandfather was a Quaker who would dutifully drive us and pick us up, but rarely ever attend the service. Some Sundays I would get to stay in the church, and particularly as I got older, I really appreciated that experience of being there with the adult community, of hearing the choir and hearing real preaching, preaching that didn't tell you you had to believe this, but explored questions. Looking back, I don't think it was probably all that great preaching, but it had a profound influence on me. Other Sundays, I would attend Sunday school classes. There, we didn't just memorize things. We listened to stories and played games and laughed. At the end of the year, there was a children's Sunday, and all the children were in church. And even though I was not really a member of that church, it was my grandparents' church, they included me in everything. Every child was recognized and given a geranium. I remember this experience from my childhood so clearly. I wondered what I had done to earn that geranium. It never occurred to me that it was simply an acknowledgement of my inherent worth as a child of God. I didn't have to pass a test or say I believe something. I just got the geranium for being who I was. At the same time, I was a great catechism student. When I was young, I could memorize things very easily, a talent I have long since lost. The fully habited nun that taught me catechism class kept careful track of the number of right and wrong answers everyone got. And to encourage you to memorize the doctrine, there was an ongoing competition. The person in each class who memorized the best was to get an award presented to him or her by the priest at a special mass at the end of the year. At the end of the competition, I had the most correct answers and therefore was scheduled to receive the award. But that mean old nun first asked her usual question that she asked at the end of the class. Did you go to church on Sunday? I said yes. But then for some reason, I've always believed someone tipped her off. She asked me, where did you go to church? I guess thinking that this was sort of like show and tell where you could share your unique experience, I proudly told her that I went to the Federated Church. Well, I didn't get to say much more. With great anger, she scolded me and told me I would now not receive the award I had won because I went to this church. I think I was 11 at the time. It was right at the end of the class, and I ran out in tears to walk home. But instead, I bravely went to the rectory and knocked on the door until the old priest came and answered. And with tears in my eyes, I blatted out, "It's not fair. I won the prize in my class, but that mean nun wants to take it away from me because I went with my grandmother to the Federated Church on Sunday. I won, and I want it." I remember him looking down at me and saying something like, "That seems a little extreme. I'll see what I can do." But I persisted. "Am I going to get the prize?" I asked. And probably just wanting to get rid of me, he said, "Yes, you will." I wasn't sure I trusted him, but the next week at that mass, in spite of the glaring look of the mean nun, my name was called, and I proudly went forward and received my prize. And here it is. It's a gold crucifix, and to this day, it means a great deal to me. In fact, it hangs in my office here. It's always stayed with me, not as a symbol of a devout faith in a crucified Christ, nor a reminder that all that doctrine that I was forced to memorize, but as a reminder of what I guess was my first battle for liberal religion. I used to think that my bold advocacy at age 11 or 12 was the first indication of my future career as a lawyer, and I suppose there was a bit of that. But today I think of my experience with that mean nun as perhaps the first experience of knowing I could not be accepted as who I was by the Catholic Church. That experience with that nun in that catechism class was exactly the opposite of the experience that our Little Mermaid had in the religious education program in her church. And it was not at all like getting a geranium for just being who you are. What I did get at that Catholic church and the Little Mermaid, what I did not get at that Catholic church and the Little Mermaid did at her church was affirmation, acceptance, and nurturing of one's unique emerging spiritual identity. Where she was empowered to be who she was and share it with her group, I was disempowered. Where she received a message that you may be different, but you belong here, I received a different message. And even though I won the battle of the moment and got the prize, it was clear to me there was no place for being different here. I do want to be fair and say that there were parts of the Catholic side of my upbringing that were very positive. I especially found that the great music and art of the Catholic Church and the sense of divine mystery spoke to my soul, and it still does. But their approach to religious education was certainly not a positive force in my life. As I grew up and continued to be confronted with Catholic indoctrination, there were times when I was strong and fought for what I believed in, but there were other times, certainly when I began to discover I was gay, when those Catholic doctrines caused me to question my own worth and tried to stifle my free thought. I have to admit at times it was confusing. But what I am truly grateful for in my childhood experience of religion was that I also had that balance. I had the Federated Unitarian Congregational Church that showed me early on that there was another way. A church where you didn't have to earn your prize by memorizing doctrine, but where there was something called Children's Sunday and every child got a geranium. Sometimes I hear someone say something like, "Well, it really doesn't matter what church it is, as long as a child gets some kind of religious education." And I cringe when I hear that statement, because I know from my own life experience that it makes a huge difference what church it is. And I don't say that to demean what other kinds of churches are doing in their religious education programs. I know they, too, are teaching some very important lessons. But I also know that in too many churches, if you are a mermaid, there's no place for you to stand. I know that experience of not having a place to stand can be very destructive to a child. This is a church where we say there is a place for every mermaid. If you get asked, where do the mermaids stand, tell the person who asks you, child or adult, you can stand proudly right here as an equal part of our congregation. As Lisa beautifully sang, you can be anybody that you want to be. That wonderful song and the story of the mermaid both reflect our first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. I think that from that principle comes what I believe should be the first goal of any religious education program, namely to help every child experience their self-worth. We must let them know that they can embrace their life experience and become who they're meant to be, and that there will always be a place for them within this community. We teach our children that they are worthy and that we support them with our love. We ask that they show the same kind of respect and love to each other. This is where we start, with the creation of a community of unconditional love and belonging. Building on that empowering foundation, we encourage our children on their journey of exploration and finding their place in the world. This journey needs caring guidance all along the way. That's what we offer in a religious education program. All of us want our children to become adults with strong moral character and values. We want them to be able to make right decisions. We want them to contribute meaningfully to society by serving others and working for justice. We want them to know what a sacred gift life is and how to respect that gift in themselves and in every person and creature of our interconnected web. We want them to understand that violence is never the answer. We want them to have a good sense of what is true and holy and sacred at the very core of their beings. We want them to be able to connect with that inner voice, to find God or whatever term they become comfortable using for that sustaining spirit. We want them to know about our rich religious heritage as well as those of others, so they may experience the variety of ways in which religious truths are expressed. We want them to know the blessing of religious community so that when they move from this one, they will find another in which to make their spiritual home and to offer their children what we have offered to them. We demand a lot of our religious education program, and it's a lot more difficult to make a place where our mermaids can stand proudly as who they are and be empowered in their unique life journey than it is just quizzing children on memorized sections of a catechism. It requires structure, good professional leadership, lots of volunteers, supervision, and support of every one of us. I'm glad we had a brief opportunity to express our thanks to those volunteers this morning, and I hope you'll take a moment to add your personal thanks when you see them at coffee hour or elsewhere. The hours of work that all those people we recognize this morning contribute to our program is extraordinary. We don't always get it perfectly right, but what a lifelong blessing it is to the child, and what a lifelong blessing it is to our future world every time we do get it right. You know, sharing stories, as we've done many times today, seems like a good thing to do on RE Sunday. And if you'll indulge me, I'd like to close with just one more. It is another true story told by one of my recently retired colleagues, Tom Owen Toll. His church is all the way across the country in California, but that story that he tells is one which can, and indeed has happened similarly right here in our own community. One day, a parent of a child in his church's religious education program got a call asking if she was the mother of Tommy Brown, a first grader at Johnson Elementary School. "Yes, I am," she answered. The caller rather timidly said, May I ask you what Sunday school your son attends? A little nervous, Tommy's mother replied, "We attend First Unitarian in San Diego. Why do you ask?" Here was the reply. "Well, you see, we're new in town, and my son is in Tommy's class at school. My son is painfully shy. He has a very bad lisp, and all the other children have been teasing him relentlessly at recess, and it has been very hard for him. Your Tommy, however, put his arm around him today and asked if he could be his friend. We don't have a church of our own here yet, but I think I would like my son to attend whatever church school Tommy is in. I figure they're doing a pretty good job. I figure we too are doing a pretty good job. So remember, the next time you encounter a mermaid looking for her place to stand, invite her to come and stand here in the midst of this great religious community. It doesn't just have to be a little mermaid. It could be an all-grown-up one. You know they exist too. Just remember to affirm her self-worth. Tell her she doesn't have to fit into a rigid box of doctrine to be accepted and nurtured by this loving community. Tell her that we have a lot of substance to offer her and that we will challenge her, but that she will always choose her own spiritual path. That, my friends, is an invitation that very few churches can make. And extending that invitation has surely made all the difference to a lot of mermaids and mermans, too. I know. I'm one of them. And so are some of you.